We're back with Fresh Pulp Magazine's Two Johns Science Fiction
Podcast.
So, welcome back. Welcome back again.
Oh, welcome to you. Welcome to you, to your own studio.
Welcome to my own studio. So, we are sponsored by Fresh Pulp Magazine and
JNelsonLeith.com.
That's correct. So, before we move into our topics for today, I want to remind everyone that this whole thing does not work without you. We need you.
We need you a lot.
We need your support. We need you to give us money so that... And I have to tell
the
you...
likes and shares. And...
Well, the likes... Well, you know, that's too abstract. You know, screw you if you can't give... No, I'm kidding. So, like, what I'm thinking is, like, you guys can carry us for a while. You know, because these are not our day jobs. But if you just sort of give us, like, money and stuff so we can buy other stuff, upgrade... Because look at our operations upgrade. Go and watch episode one. And now watch this.
And then, yeah.
Okay? But not in addition to the upgrades, I want to say that why don't you float us for a bit, and then once we get enough used followers, then
we'll
get corporate sponsorship, and you can just stop floating us.
Yeah, then we can start giving back what we got.
And we'll send you swag. We'll send you. We have like mugs on the way, shirts on the way.
Watch the last episode, the loot crate.
Loot crate. Watch the last episode. We have some serious loot crate stuff.
Right.
So any case, so like and share. You can go to the Fresh Pulp Magazine, freshpulpmag.com. The homepage is a Patreon and a Buy Me a Coffee button.
Right.
Buy Me a Coffee will allow you to do an ad hoc a donation, however much you want, 50 cents, a dollar, $5, whatever. And Patreon will let you become a patron.
Right.
So, but if you can't do that, like or share. Liking or sharing, by the way, automatically enters you for an opportunity to win the Loot Crate.
On Facebook.
So let's just like run through Loot Crate real quick.
Yeah, let's go through the Loot Crate again.
Loot Crate, we have like, from last episode... We have these great enamel pins from Shifty Collective and from Fish Cheese. Okay, these great enamel pins. John Nelson also has some great stuff.
Yeah, I decided if we're going to do a Star Wars theme, I also wanted to do a summer theme since this is the Memorial Day weekend, which most people think of as the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
So, I did a sort of outdoor grill theme, and you've got this Darth Vader bib for the cook to wear.
Yes.
And, you know... If you're going to be a cook, you've got to have a spatula, something to scrape things off that grill, and here it is.
With the lightsaber handle.
A lightsaber handle. Star Wars, whatever that plate part of the spatula is called. I mean, maybe that's just called the spatula.
Right.
but it's actually very sturdy. I was afraid when I bought it, and if it had turned out this way, that it would be flimsy.
And two people win the entire... So each person gets their own loot crate with all of this stuff.
Okay.
So... So if you like or share, you automatically get a chance to win this stuff.
Yep.
And
one last thing.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, the
bottle opener. Yes.
Yeah, the Millennium Falcon bottle opener.
Yeah.
So if you're a Han Solo fan, you got to have this bottle opener.
If you don't like the Millennium Falcon, then you're dead to me anyway. Just don't even... Well, okay, still donate. Just don't. I don't want to know you. Okay, so... So let's get into the content.
Let's get into the content.
We love all of our we have a small but stalwart following.
Yes.
So
Veda.
Veda, hello Veda. Veda's like awesome. She shows up. She's like she's down for us.
I can get Veda to comment if I hide behind my microphone. She'll tell me I'm hidden behind the microphone.
But that's how into it she is. But the other thing is I do want to take this time also to wish everyone I don't like to say happy Memorial Day. That's inappropriate. I want to say it's Memorial Day, and I want to wish everybody a good remembrance of their loved ones, and I want to thank all the families who have made a sacrifice.
Right.
Because it's not just the soldiers who have made the sacrifice. It's also the families.
Because when someone dies in that war...
And those families didn't volunteer. They got to live with that. So...
A lot of people do this thing every Memorial Day where they try to shame people who are going out and cooking. I don't feel like that's appropriate, but you do remember what the holiday is for. And this is what they were fighting for, people to have the freedom to have cookouts and things like that. So there's no reason for there to be this.
And for the record, First Amendment rights. Fighting for First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
Shame on you, NFL. Just saying. I'm not trying to get political, but...
Well, you just did.
I know. Sorry. Anyway.
So anyway.
I don't normally get political on here, but I'm That whole...
You will never see me... Well, I
say
that.
That whole
that,
swell of, like,
day,
patriotism
yeah.
with Memorial Day made me very... Like, I wanted to just batter somebody. Okay, so...
Well, we've talked about both of the first two amendments now on the thing. We're well on our way to becoming a political...
we'll stop. Okay, so...
it's unavoidable.
It
I mean,
is. Sometimes
it's part
it
of
is.
Life.
Well, yes.
Part of life. So,
okay. So, the Nebula Awards.
Right.
What happened?
I don't know. Nothing that we wanted to win or nothing that we predicted would win
nothing.
Won.
Yeah. And we predicted largely based upon the potential for rigorous science fiction.
Right.
Rigorous science as
right.
a criteria.
Right.
And as luck would have it.
I think I disqualified both of these, but I would look to say, even though they're not the ones that I would have picked...
They were
good stories, and I would like to congratulations to Kelly Robson, who wrote A Human Stain.
Yes,
and to
Rebecca
Roanhorse, who wrote Welcome to Your Authentic Indian Experience.
Congratulations,
trademark.
Yes,
I don't know how to say the trademark symbol, but it's part of this. I did like that part of it. I like the fact that she put a little trademark on the end.
That was yes.
It was funny.
Yes.
So congratulations. Sorry for all the nasty things that we said about. During our Nebula, because we said some mean things about a lot of these stories, and
yeah, but not necessarily untrue things.
No, maybe not.
Okay, so
but,
I'm going to be the villain this time.
Okay.
Okay.
But
they were all well-written stories. We all acknowledge.
Yeah,
them.
I did like
but
all the stories.
According to the criteria for that we hold the show to,
right?
It, which is if you're going to be science fiction, then it's right. got to be science fiction. If you're going to be fantasy, that's
right.
different.
Well, I have the same thing, but like I said, I don't believe that a story that just has a guy talking to a leprechaun in one or. A leprechaun in one scene in the middle of the story would be fantasy.
Right.
To me, it's the same thing. If you can take the fantasy element or the science fiction element out of it, I have the same standard for both genres. It's not part of that genre. It
yeah,
can
right.
be. Maybe we need a story for, or maybe we need a name for that kind of writing where it's just like this weird one thing thrown in there as a sort of reference to science fiction or fantasy.
Because it's not
that
Abbas
doesn't
home.
Make.
Abbas Bunhill would be something that's thrown in.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So we can just kind of like, you know, Abbas, screw you. We can kind of go
right.
with that.
I mean, a lot of stoner films do this, because, but it's explained away as being a trip, you know? Somebody takes something bad at a party, and the next thing you know, they're talking to an 8-foot tree man out in the backyard. But it's, you know what I mean? It's not inexplicable. And some of them are psychologically explained, like I Kill Giants, which is a fantastic story about, it's about a little girl who kills giants.
Right.
But it's really about her psychological journey, and the giants are metaphorical for that.
Yes.
I don't know whether I would consider that fantasy, although there are fantasy elements in the presentation of the story that I think that even a fantasy fan would like. You know
yeah.
what I mean? They're just we really need to have a whole episode talking about the genre and drawing some lines and figuring out.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
We're going to come up with that one.
Yeah.
So, so let's talk a little bit about... But congratulations.
Congratulations to Kelly Robson.
They were well-crafted stories.
And,
they were on our picks.
And Rebecca Roanhorse, who won for novella and short story, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm throwing a little hate at you. And, yeah. Yes. So, Sarah Pinkser actually won for another category, but not this one, I think. I can't remember. Okay.
Yeah,
so...
Yeah, I only looked up the ones that we reviewed. But, yeah, there were two other categories, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So, let's talk about... Let's get to the main dance.
Let's get to it.
So we have a book that we're reviewing.
Yes.
And I'm trying to hide it from the camera. I'm being coy with the book.
We're going to have to tell them at some point what this book is.
Yes, it is. So this time we're doing a book review. This week, this episode's
right.
book is Head On by John Scalzi. And why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well,
what the book's about.
It's the second in the series, which I didn't know until I finished the book.
Yeah.
It's the second in a series, and the thing that's holding the series together is a fictional disease in the near future
mm-hmm.
Called Hayden syndrome, which essentially causes locked-in syndrome, which is when you when you're fully conscious, but you can't move.
You have no neuromotor.
And that's a real thing. There are actually people who suffer from that from other medical conditions in the real world, but in this fictional world, there's a specific disease called this Hayden syndrome, which causes a lot of people to be
yes.
locked in. And what the response to this is to is twofold. One of which is to create an online forum for these people to exist in a sort of virtual mm-hmm. world, and the other one is to create humanoid robots for them to project themselves into through the internet.
Yes.
And so they can walk around in these robots, which are called Threeps,
yes.
which is a reference to C-3PO. I don't know.
But
this is the second in that series, and the premise of this is it's a murder mystery. There is an entire league of people who have Haydens, they're just called Haydens, and this league plays a game called Hilketta. Hilketta is about
like that Swedish word for
it's
murder.
It's a Basque word. It's the Basque
word
for murder.
Right.
And the whole idea of this game is that everyone goes out in their threeps. Now, in real life, of course, they're somewhere else in a bed that's specially made for them, and
right.
they're being taken care of by medics. But they're hooked up to the internet, and this connects them to these threeps that go out on the field. And the whole idea of the game is that one of the players on the defense team is designated as the goat, and the other team has to try to pull their head off and kick or throw it or otherwise get it through the goals.
Yes.
And that's the way they make points. So if it were real people, that would be pretty brutal, but it turns out that it's pretty brutal anyway.
Right, because they can feel it.
Because they can feel it. They don't feel it. Their senses are or their pain reception is tamped down, but they still feel some of the pain.
Right, the sensation.
From when their threeps are dismantled.
Well, look at it this way. They know what it's like to have their head ripped.
Right, they know what it's like to have their head ripped.
Which most people don't. So.
And at the beginning of the book, the person who is in a Hilketta game, the goat, has his head ripped off.
Dwayne Chapman.
His name's Dwayne Chapman, and the trauma from that causes him to go into a seizure, and then he dies.
Right.
So the FBI agents here, one of whom is also a Hayden, who is moving around the story in his threep body. His name is Chris Shane. His father, I believe, was a basketball star, right?
He's very rich. Like, he's not only a basketball star, but I think he made some money after being, you know what I mean?
Because, right, he's a business person.
Right, he's like a billionaire. He's like super
right.
rich. So.
And his partner, who is just a regular human being who is doesn't have Hayden syndrome, Leslie Vann. And she is a... She gives me the sense, although they don't really go into it, that she gives me the sense of someone that has some really dark corners of her past.
Yeah.
And if Scalzi keeps writing in this world, we may get to see more of that.
For me, it was like kind of like a wry, like, you know, what's the word? Quiet desperation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. And a little bit of, I've seen a lot of things, kid, that you haven't seen.
Yes.
I've done things that you wouldn't.
But it wasn't like she was wearing it on her sleeve.
No.
You know I mean?
Just whenever it comes up, and he's like, why would you want to do that? And he's like, listen.
Yeah. It was very Polanyi-ian in that way.
But I liked Van. I
actually liked her character, too. I wasn't a big fan of Shane.
No, he seemed... I forgave that about halfway through the novel, because I realized that Shane has to kind of be... He's the everyman that you're plunging yourself into.
But that's the thing, is he's not the everyman. He's the son of a billionaire.
Well, that right, but I mean,
and that's
the
thing that annoyed me about
really.
Him. It's like I'm like the most classist person on earth, okay? and I would totally hate that character. I think it was because it wasn't believable for
you
me.
You want the rich kid to act like a rich kid, and he wasn't. He wanted a regular job. He wanted to.
I can see why he wanted a regular job, because he's a Hayden.
Right.
That part I got. It was that he neither detested nor embraced his rich background. He was just like,
right.
it was almost like he was too privileged. He was like, I'm so privileged that I'm going to scorn my family, but not really, except when I need them, but I don't. I mean, it was just, it was inconsistent to
me. I can see where that would bother you. Especially considering that the take that I got was that his dad was not from a very wealthy background. That sports had given him his wealth. And so Chris Shane is the...
And I'm actually not the most classic. Maybe like the second or third.
Okay.
In the world. Like Prince Harry, I think, has gotten to be.
So you're classing the classists. You're actually ranking people who rank people.
See, I'm the kind of person that where if I were a soldier and I killed all my enemies, I would then in turn kill myself. Because I'd be like, all the monsters have to go, right?
You're a lunatic sometimes, you know?
I'm
sometimes
total.
You say the craziest. So, but I can see where you would like. That didn't bother me so much. Because my take on that was just that he had to be the character that you could just slip yourself into. Because, for example,
okay.
Because this is essentially a mystery story, It's a little. It comes out. It's sometimes it comes off a little bit like a police procedural,
yeah.
but it does follow a sort of mystery tale. And a lot of times, the chief detective in a mystery story can turn people off. Like there are people who don't like Hammer.
Yes,
who don't
I was going
like,
to say that. Story,
yeah,
who
don't
yeah.
like. They don't like Sam Spade, and to be and Spade's
Marlowe.
A good one. Cause, yeah, Philip Marlowe, I like Spade.
I
kind of didn't like because Spade's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, he's salty.
So I kind of got the sense of he wants to Scalzi was wanting to write this, but you don't. But he was trying to make Chris's so that everyone could put themselves in his place because you're already making this huge leap, trying to put yourself in the place of someone who is locked into a coma in one place,
yeah.
and yet walking around. In a virtual reality and then inside of a robot. So there was so much of a leap to be made situation-wise that if he had added on personality to get over, it would have been...
Sure. And I think what really sort of rubbed me the wrong way was the whole, like, when the guy handed him the drink and he was like, "What? Like, why are you handing me this?" And it was like... And at first, I think it kind of rubbed me the wrong way because it was like, I'm relishing in the fact that I'm richer than you'll ever be, but you are mistaking me for a servant.
Well, yeah, it was
like
a how was, dare you
treat right.
me like a servant.
It was like that
yeah,
kind
that
of thing. But then, like, I realized that he's in his three body.
Right.
So then I was like, okay, well, that can be. So but I will say for the record that I found this book very hard to get through. It was towards the end, it was a grind. Then I think I told you, I went back and read Locked In, the first book.
Okay, yeah. I did not do that. So.
And it added a lot of context and stuff because I mean the book is a standalone book. You didn't need to read the first
right, you don't
one.
Need yeah.
You don't need to read the first one in order to get into this book because we don't normally.
I read it without even knowing that there was a first book, and nothing seemed in it that I'm missing a whole
right
preface. So
the first book Locked In, I have to say, is far better, and I was actually shocked because Scalzi is prolific,
right?
And it's and I have to say it's starting to show a little.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
He's starting to respond to that. Well, he's got but we do have to give Scalzi his creds. He's got a whole series going to come out based on his old man's war, right?
Right. This guy that got by Amazon, who bought that?
I had an extra note on here. Netflix. Netflix is making Old Man's War.
So if you haven't heard of John Scalzi, he's probably one of the most prolific and probably the most successful.
One of the most well-known science fiction.
Well-known. A Rockefeller Republican who likes to tweet pictures of burritos.
So, yeah. I mean, if you like burritos, I mean, who doesn't like burritos?
Who doesn't like Rockefeller? Who doesn't like Rockefeller Republicans? I mean,
modern Republicans don't like
that's true.
We're getting pulled. Okay.
Yeah.
Stop.
But
I will say this. I don't think that this, as much as I think that this could be a... adapted for film or television, I don't think it ever will be.
No,
precisely because Surrogates exists.
Yes.
And having watched that film, the premise is so similar.
Yes.
So
Surrogates is a movie from like 2009,
right?
I think.
I don't know where it was, but it was.
It stars Bruce Willis,
Rosamund
Pike, and Robert Mitchell.
And there's no syndrome that's locking people in,
right.
But the concept is basically the same, is that your body is in one place, and you're basically going through the internet to inhabit a robot body, and people develop a weapon that when they kill the robot body, it also kills the person back in the bed. It's almost
right.
the exact same concept.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that Scalzi copied that concept, but it's so close that anybody adapting, if this is option for adaptation, they're going to bump into the Surrogates immediately, and they're going to. It's going to be like a salt on a snail and then a back off.
Yes. That's a good image. Yes, so I read the first book. The first book fleshed it out for me. It kind of reinvigorated my, I don't want to say my respect, but sort of my interest in Scalzi's work. I've read Scalzi's other stuff. I read Red Shirts, and there was another one, I forget what it's called, that I read. I'm sorry if I forget it. I've read his stuff and I like to read Scalzi for specific things. Again,
right.
He's one of those people who doesn't write big stories all the time.
Right.
So
when I was reading him, I was thinking to myself, I can think of people who would love this way more than I do, but I can also think of people who would despise this.
Yes.
And so it's very much one of those things that if you're gonna, he writes for a specific type of audience.
Let's talk about the criteria. What's our criteria
for this?
Yeah, it's prose and.
prose, concept,
structure.
Or plot. Structure and plot.
Yes.
Prose-wise, I have to say Scousy falls into the Dan Brown category of... I just... You know what I mean? He tells a good yarn, but sentence by sentence, it just doesn't... He's never going to end up in a book of literary quotes.
No.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because sometimes that can really weigh you down. And
he knows how to move a story forward.
Yeah, he does. That's exactly it. He knows how to move a story forward.
Yeah.
And
but there were some lines in here.
There were a few.
That
lines.
I really wanted to just. It made me want to club the character in the head, and it wasn't because the character was believably being a jerk. It's because the line didn't. I was like,
yeah, and there were actually a couple times where I said the line out loud to check myself. Is this as clumsy a line of dialogue as my brain is telling me it is? And I would say it out loud, and I'm like, hey, no one would say that. Nobody would say that way.
Yes.
So that bothered me a little bit. But like you said, that's not necessarily what his type of fiction is about.
Yes.
It's about moving the story forward. And I did notice that even when he would do things that I thought, there was sometimes a little bit too much exposition in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exposition that the readers needed, but that didn't really fit into it. It was like out of nowhere, someone would say something to someone else, and it was like they weren't talking to that other person.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing in the conversation which would justify them saying something.
Right.
It would just come out there. But every single time, it moved things forward.
Yes.
And you know, that's not everybody's cup of tea, fiction-wise, but...
I feel like he was better than Scott Holiday. And maybe it's because I expected less from Holiday than I did from Scousy.
Maybe.
But I felt like his dialogue was better than Holiday's dialogue. Holiday was the one who wrote Punishment, the one we reviewed in episode 2, was it?
It was early. It was very early.
Yeah, episode 2. So Emergence was another one.
Scott Holiday.
So, so he's better than... as I expect him to be. But he made some mistakes that I felt like... And also the end was rushed.
Well, I've said this before. I think I said this on one of the podcasts, is that the end of a detective story has to be rushed. Because the whole point of a detective story is to find out who did it. And then after that happens... I said the same thing about Punishment.
Sure.
Is that it's got to be over. You don't hang around with the detective.
I said the same thing about Punishment, didn't I?
Right, the arraignment and stuff. So it's not like, you know, a lot of like fantasy stories and a lot of science fiction stories and really any other kind of story. You can have this long denouement after everything's decided, because everyone kind of wants to know how the character's going to settle down into the real life. But with a detective story, anytime you're talking about a detective, an FBI agent, a cop, you know what their life's going to go back to. They're going back to the grind. They're going to the next case. So that didn't bother me so much.
It bothered me because it was like, the lawyer, and then the person gets released, and you know what I mean? It was like, I feel like he could have just put like 1,000 or 2 words in between each of the events.
Maybe,
I felt like,
maybe,
I mean, you know,
maybe.
But I can see your point with regards to the mystery.
Yeah, I kind of give mystery stories a pass on there.
The prose, I'm giving the prose like 3 stars.
Yeah, I would say 3 for the prose.
Giving it 3 because he does move the story. We know that he's not a Percy Shelley.
Right. And so I would agree with you on the 3. And so then as far as the concept,
I'm giving it 3 stars. It's this may not be Scousy's fault. So, and, you know, if you want, feel free to like superimpose a picture of my head on a burrito and put it on your Twitter page. I couldn't get surrogates out of my mind. And so I don't want to say it was unoriginal, because I don't ever like to lay that on a writer's feet, because there's no such thing as a new idea.
Yeah, there's nothing you're
okay,
adapting
to. And also, the main character, I just wasn't sympathetic to him. So I'm giving the what did I say was we on now we're not
a concept
the concept that we're giving I'm giving it 3 stars
right I'm gonna give it 3.5 only because he did add the element of this being an element which featured into the story, so it's the science fiction part of it kind of worked for me, which is that these robots were primarily developed for people who were sick.
Yes.
And there's a whole range of politics around this that he develops.
Well, I'm upgrading to 3.
Very well.
From like 2.
Oh, okay.
After having read
but
the
I'm, I'm.
And by the way, Mr. Scousy, because I was like, I read
I'm
the first.
I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he's listening.
I'm sure he's listening. He's going to be like, well, you know, Denpao Torishima, I understand.
Oh.
And like Nick Mamatas, like they tuned in last time.
That's, yeah.
And they shared us.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
I don't
but I'm going to say that despite the fact that I'm panning your book a little bit, I did feel the need to go back and buy the first book.
Yeah, that's all he cares about. You bought, I'm probably going to buy and read the first book soon.
So you got two books out of me. And I would say, by virtue of having fleshing out the story, the universe a little bit more, I raised my star rating to a 3.
Okay.
Otherwise, I would have been like,
yeah.
I may not have finished it.
Well, I'm giving the concept 3.5. I mean, I wouldn't have even started it at such a low level, but like you said, there's surrogates, and this is a concept that's kind of been around. But the fact that he adds on there the politics around the Hayden syndrome, I'm tempted.
I like that too.
You know what? I'm going to give it a 4. I want to say it's a 4 because that really does make a huge difference in the.
Yeah,
in
you're
the
right. It does make a huge difference.
I'm going to give the concept a 4.
I'm not coming up to 3.5, but I will say you're right. It does make a difference, and even like the politics is explained in the first book. Like I said, it fleshed it out for me. So, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for Hayden's going to come. Okay.
Not even real.
Well, that's why. So, would we use plot structure? Is that,
yep.
Or would you still?
I would say plot slash structure. Same thing, really.
You know, Scalzi's abilities in that respect are beyond reproach.
Right.
You know, the guy's held up over the years.
Yeah.
So you can't sit there and say, well, he is not tell a story.
We would lose a lot of credit if we tried to trash him on plot and structure.
No.
Because it would be.
I mean, I said I felt like he was rushed at the end, but at the end of the day, he had all the essential elements, and
right.
he did a good job with moving the story forward.
Yeah, this would be other than the problem with the existence of the movie Surrogates out there. This would be, I think, one of the easiest things to adapt that I've ever read, because you would hardly have to do anything. You could do a 10 episode series, and everything would be in the same order. Everything would be all the stuff would happen exactly the way it happens. The only thing that I would change in an adaptation of this is the book starts with a news story about the death in the game of Hilketa.
Right.
And I would have started with Chris Shane in his virtual reality setting to sort of establish that. That would be my opening image.
Yeah.
Would be him in this virtual reality setting that he's created for himself. And then slowly you realize that he's not really in the real world. He's, and then why? Then go to him in the bed, and then that's the way you get into it. That's the only criticism I have. Everything else here, if I were like adapting this for television, everything stays in the same order. All the characters stay the same.
But if you read the first book, you might not have to guess that.
Well, that's true. I'm saying that having not read the first book. But structure and plot wise, I give this a 5.
I would give him a 5 also, because as I said, there's no dispute. But I'm going to dock him a star because he was once an ass to me on Twitter. After I complained about Star Trek Discovery being not available on Netflix in America. I'm kidding.
You're letting your
I'm giving him a 5-star, but I had to throw that in there just to be, you know, whatever.
To remind him.
To be entertaining, but whatever. So yeah, 5 stars. So I'm giving him. I said 3 for concept.
Correct.
3 for
No, prose. It was 3 for prose, 3 for concept.
I said 3.5 for three and a half for prose.
Okay, 3.5. So
3.5, 5.
Right. So I gave 3 prose, 4 concept, and 5 for plot structure.
Yes.
So mine averages out to 4.
Yes. So we'll go together. Mine will average out to 3.75 or something.
Right.
Okay. 3.5, 3.75.
It's very hard.
One thing I will say about Scalzi's work is, he's consistent. He's reliable. Okay.
Yeah.
If you want something that's not too taxing,
right.
People keep referring to him as this heir apparent of science fiction. I'm sorry, but he's not that. But if you want a good, solid, consistent, that person, that entity has not yet emerged, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe Strauss. Sorry.
Right. But the thing is, you sometimes don't want that because, like,
expectations get too high.
Well, I'm kind of worried about the one we have up for next week because it's Vonnegut, and my experience of Vonnegut is that I either really, really love his stuff or I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So when you have someone who's like that, it's a crapshoot what you're going to get. But I mean, I've only read one of his books, but
you're consistently. I've read like 4.
He has a reputation for being a very consistently readable writer, and that's there's a value in it.
There is a value in it. You know what to expect when you buy his book.
And you don't feel almost, you'll never feel cheated.
You're almost never going to feel cheated.
Right.
So
no, I didn't feel cheated.
So
I
even though I pan him a little bit, I'm going to tell you, it's hard to go wrong. It's hard to go wrong by picking up his stuff.
Right.
So if someone just tuned in, that would be Coco Sakura. She came back. Hi, Coco Sakura.
Hey,
okay, so we're good with the review, right?
Yep, I think so.
All right. And feel free to troll us or to go on Twitter and bash us.
Disagree with us.
Mr. Scalzi, if you want to, you know, like I said.
Throw a burrito at our...
I'm going to do something with burritos at some point and, like, reference him. Anyway, so we're going to talk about a movie now, right?
Right.
One movie.
A film.
A film. So.
A picture, as they say.
Yes. A talkie. And it's appropriate to say talkie because the last time I saw this as a movie was in Technicolor.
Oh,
so,
goodness gracious.
And it's Fahrenheit 451. It aired on HBO last weekend.
Right.
And.
So this is the second HBO thing that we've reviewed.
I mean, it's a feature-length movie, though.
Right.
So why not?
Right.
It was not released in theaters and then went to HBO. It's an original.
No, that's right.
So, and also, Ray Bradbury.
Right, you can't pass up Ray. I mean, we would have to have commented on it, at the very least, even if we weren't going to review it.
Yes, that's true.
Because, you know, if someone's going to do a Ray Bradbury thing, you have to talk about it.
Okay. So, it's starring Michael B. Jordan, which right now, Michael B. Jordan can do no wrong.
Right. He's done The Wire. He was the Human Torch.
Kamran Pasha just joined in. Wait, hello, Kamran Pasha.
Where, over here or over there?
Oh, on Instagram. Hello. So you were saying, I'm sorry.
No, I was saying he's known for being on The Wire, and he was the Human Torch in Fantastic Four.
Yes.
And he said a couple of other things I can't really...
He was in Creed. He was in...
Okay,
I think he was in Fruitvale Station also, which is where he really started taking off. And obviously Black Panther. He was Killmonger.
Right.
So, and he's got a couple of other projects. If you scroll down in the Facebook, the Fresh Pulp Magazine Facebook page, you're going to see that he's got a couple of other projects that he's backing himself. And one of them looks like a really interesting, like, mecha-style anime where some of the characters are, like, it's a diverse cast. And it's an animated series, and he's either doing the voiceovers or he's backing the project. So that looks interesting. So he's got a lot of stuff going on.
Right.
So, and I'm definitely going to check out
some of the anime.
He's a busy guy. Talented guy.
And he was good in Black. I didn't like his character. I hated his character.
Yes, that meant that he did a good job. So, it stars Michael B. Jordan, Michael Shannon, who I also love.
Right, who's brilliantly evil.
Brilliantly
in
evil.
Everything. Well, I don't know everything he does, but, like, this character reminded me, like, of the character he had in Shape of Water.
Yeah.
In The Shape of Water, which came out just...
He did, like, he was General Zod. In The Man of Steel.
Oh, that's right.
He was in...
I did not... I
he was in, like, Revolutionary Road. He was in a bunch of stuff. I love
yeah.
it. I love
it. He's been in a lot of stuff, but I forgot that he was Zod in Superman.
Yes. So, I love him in that. He was brilliantly, brilliantly, brilliant.
But he played Michael B. Jordan's boss, Captain Beatty.
Yeah.
And he was...
And Jordan played Guy Montag.
Right,
he's
right.
He's the protagonist.
So, these are firemen. If you don't know the story, I think everybody knows the story. If you don't know the story, this is in the future when, after a second civil war, when the job of firemen is not to put out fires, but to burn books. And so they go around hunting down people who are hoarding books and
yes.
reading
and
books.
And I don't have the Bradbury live quote, but we're going to pause for a second right now,
right.
for like 2 seconds, because in the edited version of this, you're going to drop that in.
Yeah, I'll drop in the live quote.
So have a look at the
Asimov.
So have a look at that.
The meaning of his book. Do you have it to read?
I don't have it to read, but
okay.
One of the things that he said in the quote is, so let's pause for 2 seconds.
Right.
Okay. Now, one of the things that he said in the quote was that he didn't write the book. Everybody got this idea that they were burning all these books because of censorship.
Right.
And what he was saying was, it's unlikely that kind of thing will ever happen in America. We'll start burning books. We've learned from the Nazis, like, you don't do that.
I mean, you can't tell that. Everyone's always afraid.
Right.
It's like... Weirdly, Banned Book Week seems like they have one every month. Like,
true.
How is this happening again? Did we just have a Banned Book Week last month?
Right.
But it just says, people are always talking about, they're freaking out about banned books. And they say if some library decides not to buy a book, they call it a ban. But it's not a ban. They just chose not to buy
right.
it.
They elected to
they bought something else.
Yes.
Anyway.
So.
But his point was that it was.
Sandy
about.
Gurias is how to say. Hello.
Hey, Sandy.
Hello. So, like, one of the interesting things is that he said, no, it's not about censorship. He said, what it's about is, because, you know, Ray Bradbury was, you know, he was pre-television. His
right.
first stories were published in 1923.
So he saw
right, so what he saw was its potential for the dumbing down of the American society with television, which was the technology that drug of choice at the time.
It's kids and their TVs.
So and if you watch the movie, I feel like it came through subtly. I don't think you felt like that way, but I felt like it did because everything was broadcast, everything
right.
was social media, everything was likes.
They basically
were hi guy Montag, yeah. and you know,
right.
So I feel like that.
I like that part of it too. Is that they updated that to be something? I mean, because people are saying the same thing that Asimov was saying back then about television. They're saying it now about the web, and there's of course an element of truth in it.
Yes,
you know, it does have a tendency to dumb people down. And it's almost like you don't even have to burn the books if nobody's reading them.
Yeah.
A subject that we can get into a little bit more in another episode about people who aren't really reading books but are pretending to read books.
Yes.
We won't get into that. But no, I liked the way that they updated it, and I was really afraid when I saw that they were remaking it, that HBO was remaking it, that they would leave out one of the key aspects in the book, which is that a lot of these books were being burned because they were considered to be sexist or racist.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's not something HBO was going to leave in there. I thought they would scrap it. But they kept it in.
Yeah.
To their credit, they stayed honest to Bradbury's original story. And so kudos to HBO for that.
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
So,
The funny thing, too, is I'm not normally a big fan of Sophia Boutella. And the reason why is, I mean, okay, yeah, she's attractive and whatever. And number one, I think people are cast in her two dimensions. She's often misused. I saw her in Atomic Blonde, and I was like, whatever. And I saw her in Kingsman, and I was like, whatever.
And
I saw
her Mummy, where her character is so ridiculous.
I didn't want to see that. I was like, I can't see that again.
Right. But that's about as one dimensional as a character can get when you're the Mummy and you're just
yes.
trying to destroy everything.
So I want to like her characters. I felt like she was a bit more nuanced than this, though still two dimensional. So,
yeah, no, she was still very two-dimensional, but she did have a lot more, definitely more than in The Mummy, but she was, it seems like she's growing into...
In The Mummy, she just did this.
No, she didn't. She was a little bit more animated than that. No, this is in the 40s. She does seem to be growing.
I don't even think it's just a matter of her growth. I think she's probably got it. I think she's probably got the talent.
She's getting the opportunity.
She's not getting the opportunity, and I think she's just misused and misdirected.
Right.
So,
well, that happens a lot in Hollywood. I mean, I say Hollywood. I don't know where HBO is actually filming these things.
Yes. There was nothing about them that I didn't like.
No, I
think you had some complaints about it.
I had a weird thing that I noticed that I don't know if it's true or not. As I was poking around the internet to try to find out what other people thought, I saw someone somewhere say that there was a Rotten Tomatoes. This may actually have been on Wikipedia, a Rotten Tomatoes score of 31. But I went to Rotten Tomatoes, and they didn't have this movie ranked.
Hmm.
So if there's, like, people out there that are just trying to, like, hamstring this,
yeah.
you just be a jerk about it, cut that out.
I'm gonna say the writing wasn't just competent, it was good.
It was good. The
writing
was
good.
Yeah, I would say that the writing was... I mean, the writing on this I would give... I would give it 4.5 stars.
Yeah,
really,
I'm right there with
really
4.5 stars.
Yeah.
I think the acting. I'm giving. You know, Sophia Boutella was the one. Was the one boat anchor when it came to the acting. But she wasn't. And I wouldn't even say it was her acting.
Right.
Again, it was the direction. The direction with her wasn't bad enough for me to sink the overall score. Michael Shannon, Michael B. Jordan together 5 stars. I'm giving it to her. And the reason why is because Michael Shannon was very complex, very very complex
yes.
character. But with comparatively little dialogue, they didn't.
Right.
He didn't need to. There wasn't tons and tons of exposition.
He did things.
He did exactly.
He did things that,
exactly.
that carried his character and the conflict inside.
Yes,
I have to agree with you. It's a 5-star movie as far as I can go.
Yes. So I mean, and what do you say? Directing? Was it writing? Directing? So directing, I'm going to give it 4 stars because I feel like Sophia Boutella once again was misused. She did a good job for what she was given, but I didn't.
Maybe we did writing already.
Did we? What did
yeah.
I say?
I said 4 or 5.
No, I'm saying directing.
Oh, okay, directing.
Directing because she was misused.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I'm giving. I'm dinging it on the directing because there was an opportunity there for her to use herself to draw Michael B. Jordan to her side.
Right.
And while she did, I wasn't convinced it was her.
Right.
I was convinced more that it was the books than it was her.
Yeah, he seemed more like he was lured by the books and
yes,
her, and it shouldn't have been
by the mystery of books. So so I'm going to get that 4 stars.
Directing, it's really hard for me to give a point on the directing, because I feel like when you're given a book like Fahrenheit 451, what can you do with it?
Yeah.
You know, if it's bad, then your directing is probably not going to help.
Yeah.
And if it's awesome,
true,
it's probably not good. But I'll give him a solid 4 on this.
Solid
and
4.
Part of it is what you said. I just think that Sophia Patel is not being
properly used,
and a lot of the other characters were very. I just felt like they built the centerpiece around Guy Montag and Captain Beatty, and then everyone around the outside. There was a quick drop off
right. In
the amount of attention that all the other actors and
true.
All the other characters got.
And all those other actors were like F-list. Like,
yeah, a lot of them were.
But
I get it.
It's HBO production, you know, and right. They probably had like a 28-day shoot, so you know.
Oh, if we look these, a lot of the peripheral characters up, they probably have 14, 15 credits on HBO.
Probably.
HBO is like, they have this sort of thing about keeping people.
I'm going to recommend, though, that people go and watch the version from, I think it's 1966 or 7.
Yeah.
Because it's in Technicolor, and I love, interesting factoid about John Austin, I really enjoy watching Technicolor movies. Don't know why. I think it's because I'm colorblind.
Oh, well, yeah, because then everything's sort of popping.
Yeah, everything's like, it's a pleasure to watch in Technicolor. So let's, we have a couple of science facts. We're gonna be short on time.
This will now say science facts over our heads at some point.
Yes. So we have a science fact roundup.
Right.
Science roundup. So what do we have? What do you
look at that. Well, we have a brief thing on 2015 BZ509, which, if you don't know what that is an asteroid that is orbiting near Jupiter in the wrong direction.
Yes.
And, man, people just went all, they were just
all kinds
jumping
of crazy,
to all kinds of
yes.
conclusions. And,
yeah.
One of them was that that if it's going in the opposite direction of everything else, well, then it must have come from outside the solar
yes.
system.
Look, science people. Science. Yeah,
science
okay.
people.
Learn
and of course, there are some scientists who are like, no, that's not necessarily true. I mean, it's a good indicator that it might be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that. There are other explanations for why something can get spun around.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, we have all kinds, Venus's orbit is an anomaly. We have a lot of anomalies in the way things orbit and the way things spin. In the solar system that doesn't require everything to be sourced out of, you know, we don't have to outsource that
yeah.
stuff from our solar system. But it would be interesting if it is interstellar, because we just had an interstellar visitor in Oumuamua.
Yeah.
And that asteroid. But again, an unwarranted conclusion. And then the other one, which is among the people who were talking about it being interstellar, they were like, well, we should probe it for alien life.
Yeah.
Well, even assuming it is interstellar, why would it be more likely to have life on it than any other asteroid?
Yeah.
It just makes there's no sense in it.
Yeah, and also you don't know where that asteroid's been.
It could
it could have all kinds of bacteria and diseases and the Altarians could have, like, who knows what they did with that damn thing.
It could have been used as a toilet by the Galactic Consolidated Confederation, and
yeah. we're mining it for right. precious metals, and they're like, yeah, we use it as a toilet.
Yeah, it's a guano resource now.
Yeah, they're totally never going to.
But in all seriousness, the idea of the fact of it being from outside the solar system is a reason to think that it might look at it for life. Let me tell you something. If you find alien life on 757 Portlandia, which is one from our own,
right.
Portlandia gets 2 references.
Right. Portlandia.
Yeah, this is the second. This is the second podcast that I've mentioned Portlandia, but this one is an asteroid. It's actually a main belt asteroid that's orbiting the sun in the right direction.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why that one wouldn't have life on it more than the other. There's no the fact that one of them's from outside the solar system, and the other one's not. That has no bearing. So why would you?
Well, just because Earth was seeded by asteroid,
okay,
you know, doesn't mean that every asteroid that comes to the system is going to seed, you know,
right?
And
which it wasn't, though.
Yeah,
which it wasn't.
I mean, you know,
but that brings us to
will it be amongst the tests that we would run if we had it in our possession? Sure,
right.
But don't like speculate on something right. that we're never going to spend resources to retrieve.
That's true. But to me, the logic of that was just like, there's no reason, there's no logical reason to assume that because that it's a better place to look for life than anywhere else, just because it came from outside the solar system.
Statistically very low probability.
Which, do you want to skip, because we have dragonfly vision. Do you want to go over that real quick? Or,
well, I'm going to go
You're the one that always excited about that.
So. I mean, so if you look at the Fresh Pulp magazine Facebook page, I posted a video article about dragonfly vision. And they were talking about how dragonflies are like the most successful predators, one of the most successful predators in nature. They were saying that like large cats only have like a 20% kill rate when they're trying to, you know, hunt. But dragonflies have something like 80 or 90%. And they're talking about its nervous system. And I'm not going to get like too deep into
it.
Because I'm actually going to issue another challenge on this one.
Oh, man. Another story right
now. I'm blindsiding you a little bit. I'm surprising you.
Yeah,
this
is the second time. The last time I was like, what is he talking about?
I like this one.
Okay.
But they talk about how the dragonfly can move its wing, each of its wings independently, which is how it can hover and move like laterally in this really crazy way. They're talking about how its vision, how it has a sensor between its eyes that is like a targeting. It's like a crosshair. And how it works in conjunction with its nervous system. So basically, this targeting sensor literally sends like targeting data to the wings, so the wings know how to, you know, adjust.
Right.
Sends it to its eyes. Eyes send it also to the wings. So it's got this complex nervous system with all of these things. And these dragonflies have been around for like 60 million years.
Yeah, they're very old.
I mean,
they've looked like this
right
at that time, which
means
they're
bigger. I think at one point.
Right. They were huge during the Cambrian. But they, so if they look like this, they've been, I mean, if your design, if your structure is a certain way, you're going to have to move a certain way. You're going to have to hunt a certain way.
Yeah.
So we know that they've probably been hunting this way and this complexity had to be there in some form back then.
Yeah. So that's the article. I'm not going to get too much into you can see the science for yourself, and you can also go to the Facebook page and look at the article because it'll explain
in
more detail how they actually immobilized the dragonflies and showed them a little black dot that was supposed to kind of mimic a fly, and they showed its nervous system how it would just increase activity.
It spikes
whenever they would see something they would want to kill and eat. So I thought that was just fantastic.
What I liked the most about that story was that they discovered that the dragonfly, unlike most hunting insects, they were not focusing on the dot itself, but they were focusing on where they expected
it to
be.
Yeah.
Which means they have object permanence.
Absolutely.
Human beings don't develop until they're 2 years
object
old.
Object permanence.
They develop at around 18 to 24 months. So that's pretty surprising to me that a dragonfly, this tiny little thing. But we've talked before about how ants have passed the mirror test.
Yes.
And these things with tiny little brains
are
able to do really
these
amazing
tiny creatures
things.
Are a lot more neurologically and probably even
psychologically more complex than
and
we
even
know,
though they're
right.
governed mostly by their instincts, who knows, maybe they're even like a little more emotionally complex than we even credit for.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Next time you want to swat a dragonfly,
think twice.
I mean, even swatting at one, even if you miss, you might hurt its feelings. So, you know, stop being a jerk. Don't be that person. Okay, so do we have another?
We can talk about the octopus one, but I feel like that's like a retread of what we complain about the asteroid, because there are people who, these guys, I think it was 33 researchers published a paper that's claiming that octopus are the result of alien spores coming to Earth and
no proof.
Mutating squid genes.
Yeah.
And that's what gave you octopus.
Octopuses. And
guess what I found out about these authors?
Tell us.
Not a single zoologist.
Wow.
Among the entire
not one.
Dozens of authors on this. So that was one of the things that I was like, oh, really? Well, it's a good thing that they let them publish that
paper.
Were
there any cryptozoologists?
No, but there were a lot of people who were big advocates of panspermia, which is, you explain the origin of life by saying, well, it came to Earth from outer space, from another planet. And I'm like, that doesn't really explain the origin of life. You just kick the can down the road.
It's a theory of sperm everywhere.
Right.
And everywhere is sperm.
Yeah, well, So, yeah, so anyway...
Well, all their theories have to do with sperm.
The problem is, they're scientists. They don't get a lot of... You know, they don't get a lot of time out.
I wasn't going to go there, but okay.
But, the thing about this is this story took off, even as other scientists were trying to say, no, this is ridiculous. And it got spread all over... And this is how things get spread. throughout our culture. I'm sure that there are people 5-10 years from now who are going to be like, "Yeah, I saw one time that scientists said that octopuses are from outer space." And
yep. If I'm at that cocktail party, you should
just
walk the other way.
Yeah, just.
But I am going to say also, I think it's displaced fear. It's displaced fear amongst under-scienced people that has to do with the octopus, the takeover. Because
they're so smart.
Of what is their classification, arthropods?
No, they're mollusks.
Are they mollusks?
Yeah.
They are mollusks.
Yeah,
yeah, so because they do have creative faculty.
Yes,
and they do have problem-solving faculty.
Yes, they do.
And we have completely abused this world.
Yes,
so,
we have.
I think it's just displaced fear from, like, sea levels rising. That's what I think it is.
Oh, yeah, you know what? That's true.
Yeah.
But you can make friends with aqua. I mean, yeah.
Directly.
I mean, I've seen, you know, people are, they interact with them.
I love calamari too much.
I don't eat that.
Okay.
I don't eat it anymore now that I've discovered. Once I figured out that octopus, how smart they were, I can't bring myself.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
I ate a live one when I was in Japan last time.
I
swallowed, like, a small one live. Now that I think about it, it's terrible. You're right. I just went on this big thing a minute ago about insects having emotionally complex lives. And I'm like, can't wait to fry me up some mollusk. All right, well.
Well, snails are okay because they're dumb. But I do have a story about snails if we have time.
Yeah, we have time for snails.
Okay.
We have a few
minutes. This is one that goes beyond snails. But what happened was that the scientists took a, they were shocking snails. And then they would follow them with a little weak touch.
Yes.
And what they found is, and then that other one, other snails, they didn't shock, but they would just touch them. To see
there's something somewhat.
Go
ahead.
Like torturing them. So yeah, the snails that they had shocked and then touched, when they would touch them, these traumatized snails would pull all of their appendages into their, you know, into their body for a good minute or so. Whereas the ones they hadn't shocked wouldn't do that. They just pulled them in briefly. But that's not the interesting part.
What's the interesting part?
The interesting part is, then they took RNA, you know, genetic material, from the shocked snails and put it in other snails that had never been shocked, and those snails acted like they had been shocked. So they transferred the snail's memory.
Transferring
RNA.
Yes.
Not brain cells, not synapses, RNA.
In the not-too-distant future, even
genetic
you...
material.
Through snail transfer can know what it's like to be tased.
Right, can know what it's like to be tased as a snail. And,
yes.
And your eyes and your ears will pull back into your head.
So,
but no, it is a fascinating story. And even,
it is, yeah.
Even the researchers who did this are, you know, they were very upfront. They're like, we have absolutely no idea what this means about memory.
Right.
But it happened, the result was significant, and therefore we need to look into this more.
Yes.
About what in the world is happening to our RNA when we suffer trauma.
I mean, I do love escargot, but ever since...
Yeah, but snails aren't that smart. So
ever since large varieties of snails in this country started being infected with parasites, I stopped eating. So, but anyway, I don't really eat
snails
at all.
Yeah,
so.
My line is somewhere... I don't eat snails because I just don't like them, but my line would be somewhere...
You ruined me
on
octopus now, thank you.
An octopus... Squid, too. Can't do squid. They're smart, too.
Oh,
so, that is our science fact section for this week. And
I'm going to take a second to remind everyone, because we're going to tune out here in a second, like and share. Like and share, like and share. We would love it if you would go to our Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee page.
Yes.
And donate a little bit of Dosh to us.
Either a one-time donation or a subscription.
Or, yeah, Patreon would be a subscription. Buy Me a Coffee would be one time. If you can't do that, just like and share. Best part about liking and sharing. What's the best part?
The best part is if you do it on Facebook, you make yourself eligible for the Loot Crate.
The Loot Crate. We've got pins, mashups, dark chewies. We got everything.
Yes.
So, and the Loot Crate's only going to get better. So, and we have some projects that we'd like to fund that with your help. We have to be involved. So please support us by liking and sharing. Or
we keep wanting to expand.
Expand,
better
getting,
production,
getting,
more things that we want to get into.
Go back and look at episode one and look at this
episode.
Look
at episode one and then look how far we've come with this. I mean, we're practically geniuses at this thing.
we're like moderately intelligent, like journeymen.
We're in outer space. I mean, this is private sector space travel.
We're using the force right now to keep ourselves alive. Okay, so thank you guys for tuning in. It was great. We had a good time today, and we will see you again. We're going to put this up. We're going to put the video up this week, but first... We're going to put the audio podcast up. Subscribe to our podcast channel because they'll
absolutely
get notifications for it right away.
Yeah. So you'll know when we're going to be on.
Yes.
Or you'll know.
And subscribe to our. We're going to live cast from YouTube. When we put the video up, it's going to go on YouTube. Subscribe, right. Like, and subscribe our YouTube page.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Great.
So that is it for this, and we will see you next time.
Absolutely.